Ahoy, fellow microphilia enthusiasts. Jesus, Greg.
And welcome aboard the Joy of Trek, a microscopic podcast exploring the subspace compression anomalies and Jem'Hadar hierarchies of Star Trek.
All of it. I'm Cocky.
I'm Kay.
And inside the circuitry compartment is your chief engineer, Greg.
Together, we're on a mission through the plasma vents of Star Trek to find the honored elder in every alpha and the excellence in every episode.
Even the Klingon poetry.
Because every episode must be someone's favorite, and it might as well be us.
So measure yourself twice and join us as we cross the Rubicon into
the joy of Trek. Yes, thank you very much to be with us again today. And I don't know why I went in that direction, but here we go.
Hey, I like your... You're good at vamping. Like, you do sort of freestyle jazz with syntax, and I kind of dig it. Like, just have confidence, man. Like, okay. Everybody's into it with it. You know, like, okay. Yeah, no, just grip it and rip it, baby.
Just cracking my can of Coke so I have something to drink while we're on the subject of this episode. So, yes, who guessed which ship episode run? Did we give hints at the last one of this episode, or did we skip out on that?
We did. We did. Okay, full disclosure, because this is how our timey-wimey little vortex sort of goes. So we've recorded this a bit in advance, and it's actually been quite a bit since we've had an opportunity to record together.
Yes, absolutely. I've been on a vacation, so we have an ample buffer in our schedule so that we can...
Yeah, you were getting some Andorian skiing in with some buddies.
Absolutely. It was fantastic. I've got this, Batman tan going for me right now.
Oh, awesome. What's a Batman tan?
It's like only your lower half of your face.
On account of the ski helmet.
Exactly.
Well, meanwhile, I had a really bad case of laryngitis.
Oh, yes.
And then I coughed so hard, I cracked all my ribs.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Are you recovering well? Are you off the painkillers?
Weaning off. Okay. Weaning off. I'm having fewer dalliances with Mrs. Tramadol and her chemical daughters.
Yes, that's a potent one.
Yeah, so I'm told.
Yeah, well, maybe Dr. Bashir can have a quick look at you and wave his magic wand at you to heal your cracked ribs.
Okay, there was a moment in this episode, not to dump the warp core straight away, where after something terrible happens, Jadzia goes, oh, no, and then he comes over and he goes, woo, and she goes, oh, that's better.
Yeah, they wanted to save up on the makeup, you know, that they didn't want to, have her, with this terrible wound on her face the rest of the episode. So
I want a woo-woo-woo thing that just makes all the boo-boos go away.
I don't think you're the only one in that one.
Okay, this episode.
So, we are doing DS9 Season 6, Episode 14, One Little Ship.
First aired on February 14th. Oh, it's a...
very close.
It's a Valentine's one. 1998, written by David Weddle and Bradley Thompson and directed by Alan Croker. Now, you and I have seen a lot of the work of David Weddle and Bradley Thompson because Ronald D. Moore, one of the principal writers of the second season of Deep Space Nine, he cut his teeth on The Next Generation, went on to do Battlestar Galactica. I think the time has passed when we call it, the new one.
BSG, yes.
Because it is Battlestar Galactica, and then
there's the 1970s.
TOS, yes. TOS.
TOB.
The original, kind of.
Yeah.
And it's a writing team, much like Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Braga have been, and they're huge on their military history, and they really enjoyed doing stuff on the Defiant.
Yeah.
We find out this time.
So the synopsis of this episode is, this is the story of a little ship that took a little trip. Thank you, Greg. I assume that was you.
Actually, that was me.
Oh, that was you. Okay.
Yeah, we haven't really divided the role of the person who has to do the synopsis because we don't want to straight up copy something else. And my various dalliances with computer technologies have not resulted in something reliable. And hello, we're being joined by our podcat, the inestimable Pip. She's decided that now is lap time. Oh.
And that's better than attacking cable time.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, just let her
just
have a little
sit there. Ignoring my headphones. This is working great. Let's see how long this holds. Oh, no.
Unfortunately, your phone is attached to a cable.
I'll take off the charging cable of the phone where I'm reading here. Yeah.
Yeah, she's an adorable kitten.
But you're right to pay attention to Greg, because it is thanks to Greg that we have this recommendation.
All right. Well, in your own words, Greg?
Oh, actually, in the words of his brother.
Oh, okay. So as for the recommendation, we have Lieutenant Commander Sheev Palpatine.
Palpatine.
Is that how you spell it? Palpa-pals is fine. He recommends DS9 614 One Little Ship, saying...
So as a child of the 80s, it's no surprise that the Disney movie Honey, I Shrunk the Kids made a big impact on me. if you combine that concept from my youth with the technobabble about what one would need if one wanted to breathe the air, someone as small as they get, whatever, you've got yourself kind of a great Star Trek episode. Star Trek going full camp is the best. It's like a break from the we gotta save the universe mode that like a lot of Star Trek nowadays kind of falls into. And it's really just a breath of fresh air. It also has like the Dominion being like menacing but like beatable because like it's this tiny ship and they beat them. And then Worf's poetry, which is just kind of like an amazing, like, it's just like a DS9 bit, and it's the best, whatever. Also, any of your listeners now, listen to Rebel Air. It's great, especially the holiday episode. It's probably the best thing in the world. So, yeah, that's all.
Air, yes. with an H there, a little, yes. Little reference to some fun that Greg and I used to have.
With another podcast, yes.
Yes, when he took me on a journey through Star Wars Rebels, and the podcast was called Rebel Air. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And Greg's brother, Zach, here representing himself as Lieutenant Commander Sheev Palpatine, was a regular contributor there. So I'm very glad to thank you for joining
us
here.
I believe.
Yes, we had a segment that we will not be repeating that did result in any time we made a little Star Wars boo-boo, listeners would get to write in and tell us all about it. And you know what? Star Trek, we're just not going to bother. Just not going to bother with that. We're not going to bother with that.
Hey, very good.
Yeah, we sure did end up killing about like 3,000 plus bosses at some point. It was really bad. It was really, really bad. It was a lot of fun. I think it's for the best that that moment in time is behind us now, because there's so much blood on our hands, Cocky.
So that actually leads to a little trivia thing that I see here, that the episode was dubbed Honey, I Shrunk the Runabout behind the scenes, which is really good, which also answers one of the questions that I have, because like since when do shuttles have phasers and photon torpedoes?
Ah, well, the Danube-class runabout has long been mentioned as having photon torpedo launchers, right. But they've never been used before.
Okay.
We've never seen them.
Tiny little blue photons. Boop, 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 boop.
I know, they're so adorable, little firecrackers. I mean, the pack of wallops still. Oh, and for those of you who aren't familiar, I mean, if you've seen this episode, then the one-line synopsis would have been enough, but let's see if we can do this. So while on a strangely scientific mission, which is a nice break from the Dominion War, the Defiant is being sent off to investigate some strange spatial compression phenomenon. And while traveling in their runabout, which the Defiant can sometimes house and
whenever
sometimes...
whenever plot requires it.
Yeah, how that goes. Three of the crew are traveling through this compression field, and then they come out... and they're tiny. And meanwhile, the Defiant has been taken over by Jem'Hadar, and this tiny little runabout has to sort of sneak inside and cause all sorts of shenanigans to help their captive crew.
And the runabout is about this size, and the crew is about this size, which would really help a lot more if this wasn't audio only and you could actually see what I was doing with my hands there. But just watch the episode and you'll see them doing it many times when they're talking about the actual size.
Oh, you know what? Or, okay, this may be edited out depending on what kind of discussion we have about this afterward, but you could also join our Patreon, links to which you can find at joyoftrek.links.
And you can watch me doing Big Fish, Little Fish cardboard box. And
well, we might start posting some packs of GIFs from the episode, like we used to
taking on Paramount, copyright lawyers?
Hey, let's see how far we get. Okay,
let's see how long it takes before we get our first cease and desist letter.
Yeah, hey, there's only one way to find out, which is sign up for our Patreon. You'll help pay for these microphones that I'm sure these cables will definitely need replacing pretty soon, because, my God, Pip, your lovely pod kitty is sure eyeing them with interest.
It's dangly and thing, so it must be a toy.
Do you have a warp core that you want that you want to dump? Which is what we... Yep.
Oh, wrong one.
The other one.
I say we eject the warp core!
Oh, let's see. Do I have any big ones?
And as we discussed previously, like, I'm going to be a little bit critical, and I'm going to also, like, have... You can have one more than me.
Yes. Are we going like back to the technical stuff or just like the things that I didn't like about this episode? I mean, or do we get to pick on the technical stuff during the
really think about, because I think that's how we originally titled this segment.
Yes.
But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, what did you think of the play? Yes. Like something really glaring that you just have to squint your way past?
Unless it's technical, I don't have any.
No, same here.
No, there's nothing story-wise that bothers me very much, or that was like, yeah, no.
I guess nothing we get along to keep on Warp Core. Yes. I thought it was an absolute delight.
There's some technobabble stuff that I'd like to have a pick at, but we'll get to that when it comes up.
Awesome.
Okay, so in that case, I do press the right button this time.
Yes.
Right, into the episode. We start with a shot in which the Defiant and the Rubicon are flying towards a space anomaly. And in the long tradition of Starfleet taking liberties with the security and life of their officers, they send a live crew in.
Okay. You sure you don't have any warp core, bro?
No, I'm absolutely
that sort of sound like it.
No, I'm just like, this is standard operating procedure for Starfleet, you know? We have an unknown phenomenon where, so in this case, they actually sent in some probes, which did
they
come out.
They have sent probes,
which did come out properly. And yes, so therefore they are fairly confident that it'll work on humans.
And the Rubicon runabout is tethered by
a transporter beam. Yes.
What's it called? A tractor beam.
Tractor beam, sorry, not a transporter beam, yes.
To help them guide.
So, how small are they?
The miniaturization process won't begin until the runabout reaches the edge of the accretion disk.
Oh, they supposed to also try that on the probes if that tractor beam still works on a shrunken thing.
Yeah.
Because we, as is established by something that Bashir said, they are actually shrunken, and also the molecules on board the ship, everything is just shrunken. Because I think it's like some... They mentioned accretion disk several times, which is a term that I've generally only heard... No, wait, did it say accretion disk?
We're about to enter the accretion disk.
Or...
We'll talk again once we've left the accretion disk and reversed the effects of the compression. Rubicon out.
Because an accretion disk happens around...
Anything with gravity and dust.
Yes, exactly. I think they said accretion disk, and I was
I
was hearing Event Horizon.
They've penetrated the accretion disk.
Because it was like more of a
Wishful thinking there.
Black
hole.
It's a black hole.
Look at the graphic, like this sort of nebula thing. Yeah, we've got the GIFs.
Yes, we have GIFs,
which maybe you can find on the Patreon. Go and sign up. It's only $5.
Right. We have a lovely nebula with a few stars in it, and nothing which even looks remotely like an accretion disk. But all right.
Hey, you don't. You might be seeing it from the top on.
It's not very disky, is it?
It doesn't have to be. It's with a... Actually, hey.
Yeah.
Do you know why it's a why you spell compact disc with a C and hard disc with a K?
No, do tell.
Because a disc has to be disc-shaped with a C.
Yeah.
But a disc with a K is sort of more metaphorical.
Oh, you know what the platters inside a hard disc look like, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But they are disc shaped.
Yes.
Okay. No, that's yeah. No.
No. No. Just saying.
No. Just okay. No. Okay. No. Fine.
And did you? Speaking of this, remember those credit card sized little compact discs that you occasionally got from?
For our younger listeners.
Oh God! Yes.
Close your eyes and imagine
the 90s.
Yeah. Imagine taking a compact disc. And then introducing it to another compact disc. And like after a while, they sort of settle down and they give each other a very special hug. And then a baby compact disc comes out. And then you take that baby and you cut the top and sides off into sort of a rectangle that fits inside a CD player.
Yeah. It took some careful aligning unless you had a laptop CD player, which had
one of those spindles.
Little things you click it on. That worked really well on those. On the other ones, not so much.
Yeah, you couldn't exactly like feed it into the slot on your car CD player.
No, that would not work.
But that was for singles and stuff.
Right. Really so much cool. For old people of Star Trek.
Okay. Hey, we are little green bamboo shoots in a forest of wizened sequoias when it comes to Star Trek.
This is true.
There are many people out there who are proudly still podcasting and enjoying the original series, having seen it firsthand, and what a treasure it is to be part of that culture.
Yes.
I don't feel any smaller. Well, believe it or not, you're about a meter tall and shrinking fast. In a few minutes, you're going to be half the size of a comm badge.
There's a comforting thought.
Brian O seems to have a little bit of, how shall we put it?
Size envy.
Size envy, yeah.
Yeah, it's like size anxiety.
He's a little bit nervous about sizing up to everybody else.
I think it's brilliantly written because it starts off on the bridge of the Defiant and Kira is walking around asking the same question of everyone else. Yes. So they're going to be smaller. Yes, in fact. And then Nog gives a perfectly good scientific explanation and she goes, okay, so
they're
just going to be...
And she has the hardest time not to crack up.
I'm not laughing. No. Just because we are shrinking three people to the size of coffee cups.
Smaller, actually.
Get out of your system.
Because that's the audience reaction. C's a surrogate for the audience.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we're doing some Land of the Giants shit. We're doing Honey, I Shrunk the Danube.
Yes. Or what's that other movie where they, like, shrunk a submarine to go into a patient and...
Oh, the Voyage of the something.
Voyage
oh,
something?
No. Incredible Voyage was one, and also, like, Inner Space.
Oh, yes, that's the one, yeah.
Oh, featuring Robert Picardo as the cowboy. A very sexy character. He still had his hair then. Inner Space is a really good movie we should watch sometime.
Bashir is actually goading O'Brien along a little bit. He's like feeding into his insecurities. And like he's doing this constantly throughout the episode. He's just he's like, I mean, they're besties. And like he is just like digging in there, you know.
And he's bored. He's got nothing else to do. He's not doing the science shit. He's just there monitoring their life signs. Any medic could have done it.
Yeah, okay.
But he wanted to be there to mess with Brian-O. There's another interesting bestie relationship, which is happening on the bridge, where Kira, when she has her breakdown, laughing, then Worf goes,
I do not see what is so humorous about being small.
Neither do I.
Yeah, hey.
And of course, Worf and Dax are married at this point.
Yes. And as their communications are breaking up because the antennas are shrinking, like she says, okay, we're entering the accretion disk or what the fuck ever.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear the poem.
That she commissioned Worf to write.
Because apparently it's an ancient Klingon tradition that great accomplishments should be commemorated with a poem, and she's
and this
asked...
is a little ship that went on a little trip.
Don't.
As Worf proclaims the first line of the poem to be.
Only after much goading at the end, because now, like, Sisko asks for, well, what have you got so far? And then Nog bumps in with, oh, they're entering the anomaly now. And Kira goes...
Now, is it my imagination, or did the kid just cover for him?
This could be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yes.
Like, nicely done.
Very smoothly done.
And then things go not so smooth. Oh.
Because just as the ship is like approaching smallness, factor 15.
The boat goes a-rocking and it's abandoned by its tether and they're free-falling.
Because the Defiant is being attacked by the Dominion.
Yeah, a Jem'Hadar ship.
Yes, warp drive offline, impulse drive offline. And suddenly, apparently, shields offline as well because the Jem'Hadar beam straight aboard. And with minimal effort, take over the ship.
Was a very, very successful ambush because apparently, like, they used this anomaly to sneak up on the Defiant.
Hide their warp signature.
Yep. Having made a bold and daring raid into Federation territory. So, yes, unfortunately, the Defiant has been boarded.
Boarded, yes.
Yeah. And the bold Jem'Hadar declares, like,
surrender, or you will all be killed.
Watch me twirl my horny moustache.
They don't have moustaches. They've got these weird little chin teeth.
They're horny. They're horns. They're little horns.
Fair point, yes. Chin teeth are...
But the crew on the runabout have no idea because they've closed the blast shutters against the gamma ray flux.
Yes.
And so while they're trying to get everything back online and Jadzia's little boo-boo is fixed with Bashir's woo-woo, which I was very, very envious of because that seems a lot better than the various medical miracles that I've been granted by my doctor, for which I'm very grateful and which I'm obeying to the letter. They do have some side effects.
Painkillers go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
See, I just thought you were jealous because you wanted Dr. Bashir to show you his woo-woo.
So there's a lot of fixing to be done. And with all these systems down, okay, they've got no communications, we've got no optical sensors, and we've got these blast shutters shut. And Jadzia says, like, give me visual or give me windows, whichever one's fastest.
Give me visual or give me death. In the meantime, we see that there is, like, a little bit of strife among the Dominion, the Jem'Hadar, are being led by the first, as is traditional.
Yeah.
But there seems to be, I mean, I don't remember. It's been far too long since I've seen DS9 in its entirety. Has there really been a mention before of the alphas and the gammas at this point, or is this when we're introduced to the new...
There's not been a mention of this before or since, in fact.
Oh,
so okay. here's the thing. Since the closure, or since the mining of the wormhole that connects the Gamma Quadrant to the Alpha Quadrant, through which the Dominion has poured its troops in order to conquer the Alpha Quadrant, since that's been closed, the Jem'Hadar have been isolated.
Right.
And refreshments of the troops have not been arriving. And so apparently the founders have set about... breeding, which is interesting since we've only ever seen male Jem'Hadar, male-presenting Jem'Hadar, I should say, have been breeding a new class of...
Well, I'm assuming they've vat-grown them since they, like, I don't know how much time is spent, but...
They say breeding? It goes very fast.
If you had not eliminated our fleet in the wormhole, there would have been no need to breed Alpha Quadrant Geminar.
They are mature size and fully capable and knowledgeable of warp technology within a relative short period of time.
We've actually seen that on an earlier episode of Deep Space Nine. An infant alien was discovered and nurtured and raised by the crew, and to their surprise, like, it grew incredibly quickly, absorbed information incredibly quickly, became a toddler and then a tween and a teen.
And a full-blown Jem'Hadar.
And it turned out to be a Jem'Hadar, to their great surprise.
Yeah.
So that's how fast they go. And apparently a new alpha group has been created who are being genetically and psychologically designed
for combat in the Alpha Quadrant.
And you see that in a few aspects. Like, they're a bit more, like, boastful. They're less cautious. They also stand less on formality, as you see.
Yes, they don't do the whole ritual when they get their daily infusion of life juice.
And I wonder if that maybe is a sort of response to, I don't know, maybe on the Gamma Quadrant, most of the cultures there are more ritualistic than the ones that they found in the Alpha Quadrant. And so it somehow makes sense to breed a species that they can better model more casual, less formal species, like the Klingons that they're facing.
Yeah, fair enough. Who are more ritualistic again, but...
Well, they have rituals,
but
they're also extremely practical. Like, consider the Klingon language, where you have no niceties. You have no please, you have no thank you.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of a Klingon conversation is you walk up to the person that you want something from, you say what you want, they say their response, and you walk away without saying goodbye.
Yeah.
Right, it's like a Hollywood movie phone call where where somebody gives you the information that you need and you just hang up, not saying bye. It's like, always like, what's it like for the person on the other side?
We have the situation where the first of the Jem'Hadar is an alpha, and the second, although he is respectfully referred to as elder several times, is clearly not in charge anymore, and the new kid in town is trying to prove himself. He is like, he rarely listens to the advice that the elder gives.
It must be gratifying for an elder to end his career with a victory. I feel privileged to be here with you at such a moment.
He's being a little bit dickish about it, like, truth be told. But
Jem'Hadar don't live long.
Oh, yeah, okay.
There might be, I think they live less than a decade. And I think you can see that in a bit of the makeup. You know, great job by Michael Westmore.
I was trying to see if there were any systematic differences between the alphas and the deltas. But,
right.
The gammas, but I couldn't quite spot anything consistently.
Well, the only gamma we've got is the second.
Right.
And he's significantly grayer. He's more pallid. He's
older. So,
right. And you can also see that on, like, his head crest, the horns, the bones are fused together in, like, a single crest, whereas some of the younger ones have individual horns or teeth. Or maybe that's just how individuals work. Yeah.
Well, he reports in saying that he's successful against the Elder's advice, who wants to, like, make sure that the whole ship is secured first and operational before they report success. But he is eager to report an immediate success of the successful capture.
To a sort of disinterested Vorta, who picks up the phone while the Zoom call looking away at first.
Only at the end he actually looks at the screen.
Specifically to look at the Elder. And this Vorta's really interesting because he's poking at this animosity between them.
Do I detect a note of jealousy in your voice? I'm sure it must be difficult for you to watch a new race of Jem'Hadar beginning to supplant you and the other members of the old guard.
He's almost trying to inject it, which is, I hadn't really noticed at that point. Like, the Elder was just doing his job.
I guess that's the Vorta's role, right? They're intelligence gatherers, they're diplomats, manipulators, and they're always, like, poking for little weaknesses, which must be how they run their own ships as well.
Yeah.
Because controlling a large group of Jem'Hadar is tricky, as we've seen before.
But yes, the First is very insecure about his position. He's very controlling and dominant over it. I read that as insecurity.
Yes, because he's so overconfident.
Yeah.
And you never see it break, which is, you know, sometimes how insecurity is presented on screen. But a lot of the time, insecure people are really skilled at hiding it all the time, and then eventually that becomes pretty toxic.
Yeah, which is something that kind of happens here. I mean, there's some infighting. You know, there's like malicious compliance here and there later on from the second. So, yes, there's definitely...
I'm trying to look at this from the Firsts now, right? He's the alpha. Like, I'm kind of on his side now, just to give that counter perspective, because the second, who is a gamma, is also just, like, objecting to everything almost out of habit. Like, He rejects everything. And it becomes a little bit paradoxical because the first orders, bring Captain Sisko up to the bridge. And the second cautions him, his execution should wait until the repairs are underway.
Right.
And then 5 minutes later, the second has decided, oh, no, wait, hold on. You should execute him now.
Yeah.
So it's almost a bit knee-jerk from the second.
Okay, I hadn't considered that. I was thinking, like, yeah, he was...
The more experienced officer.
Yes.
Who's definitely.
I got more of a, well, that's not how we do this vibe. Yeah. That's more like a, that's not how we have always done this vibe from him.
I was thinking, do you ever see the submarine movie U-571?
Maybe.
Or, actually, no, Cobol's Last Gleaming in the second season of Battlestar Galactica. Let's go with something you know, where a group has crash-landed, including a very, very experienced engineering officer who is only a petty officer. He's an NCO and therefore not in command. And a very, very green lieutenant who hands out orders.
Yeah.
And the deck chief goes, that's kind of not how we do it.
Yeah. It's,
you know, he's being awfully literal.
Well, that's it. Yes, he literally goes to a command procedure that they told him in officer school, and he's like, "Oh, it's not how to do it." But then again, that's not how you do it. Like, as a, I mean, okay, I don't know this from military. I don't have any military training or experience, but in Starship Troopers, Heinlein describes it very well.
Ooh, we're going deep into the sci-fi lore here. Yeah, fascinated.
The third Lieutenant Rico gets basically told off by his commanding officer. It goes like, yeah, you're making a mess of things because you are walking around among your squad and you are getting on their nerves. What you do is you tell your sergeant how you want it and then you let the sergeant deal with it.
Yeah.
That's how it works. The sergeant is the man who harasses the troops. You're the one who commands them. And that's what,
right.
And that's what happens in that episode of Cobol's Last Gleaming. The lieutenant tries to work the men directly. And no, he should tell the sergeant, this is what I want. This is what we're going to do, and then he should let the sergeant work it out, because that's the sergeant's job.
Did he even have a sergeant, though?
Oh, well, I'm not sure if that was a petty... It was the deck chief. It was the deck chief who was running that thing. It was not
welcome
a sergeant.
Welcome to Battle Flan Galactica. Do you have a Battlestar Galactica podcast? Hey, if we were going to start a Battlestar Galactica podcast right now, what would we call it?
Oh,
go. First thought, best thought.
Jesus. Oh, that's like...
Cattle Star Galactica, and then it'd all be cows.
Oh, wow.
We'd have Moo...
No.
Mer instead of Boomer.
Oh,
no.
Gosh, no.
It's tricky, isn't it?
The only XO right now I want is Hennessy.
If you're going to do that podcast, Cocky, you're on your own. I don't know shit about Battlestar Galactica, so I can't be your chief engineer when I don't know anything about it.
Back to the show.
Yes.
Okay. Conveniently, for casting reasons, the majority of the crew have been put in a storage room.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We never see any of the
crew.
We
never see them. In fact, at the end, Sisko gasses them along with the Jem'Hadar.
I mean, why not?
Only the... Hey, it's a nice day off.
It's anesthetic gas anyway. This is perfectly safe.
Yes, because randomly dosed anesthetics are perfectly safe for everyone.
All species.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, back
and
to the
interesting
thing.
People who are paid a lot of money to be sexy on screen are all stuck
crew.
In the mess.
Yeah. Namely, Worf, Sisko,
Nog, and Kira.
Yes. Who have a quick little powwow about like what they should do now that they are in this situation.
Worf is pacing back and forth and he's blaming himself, and
he's looking for a way to break out, and Nog is very quiet and like...
He's just blaming himself. Yeah. You know, I should have done this, should have done that. And Nog says, oh, well, you couldn't have... And Kira just goes, shut.
Yeah. Sisko verbally bitch slaps Worf and like, shut it. Like, you did what you needed to. Like, no blame is to be had here.
So here's a fun little bit of trivia. The husband and I have been rewatching DS9.
Yeah.
And just on Friday, before we recorded this, we caught up to this episode. So I've actually seen it twice in 3 days.
Oh, okay. That's convenient.
Yeah, and I've seen a bit of the next one. And for some reason now, I've been really thinking about Worf, because my husband doesn't like Worf.
He's a
terrible father, and he gets all these issues. And then it occurred to me, because what we know about Klingon psychology, how he describes it, other Klingons describe it, like they're more aggressive than humans are used to, and that's managed in Klingon ships through the usual two things, outlet and pushback. right? Yeah. Let the crew push back against each other, give them outlets for their aggression, and then you can like benefit from all of that. But he doesn't get any of that in Starfleet.
No, I guess not, because that's not the Starfleet way of doing things. Yeah.
And if you don't like Worf, then you just see these outbursts and these like cultural demands that he makes on this environment that he gets a lot of accommodation for. But what you don't notice is that any time that he's being professional and reasonable, he's controlling a lot of impulses.
Yeah.
You know, right now he wants to rip the entire ship apart. He wants to beat the wall, and he's not doing that. So I sort of got this imagination while I was watching him pace back and forth. Imagine if Tuvok was here and just gave him a quick, just a little quick sort of mind meld and just felt the actual emotions that were bubbling through beneath the surface. He would at first go, everybody clear the room. There's a volcano exploding. And then realize, oh, he's not. This is you every day?
Yeah.
And then drop to his knees and like call in all the other Vulcans. We have a new philosopher master. Like, teach us your ways. The emotional control that Worf must be executing all the time. How do you do it?
Yeah.
Because if we could do what you do.
Well, that depends a lot on.
We wouldn't have Ponfar. We just every day.
But that like also depends a lot on your viewpoint on the nature versus nurture thing. Like, are Klingons like this because they are that by nature, or is it just like a product of Klingon culture?
And that's something that has been explored in Star Trek before. There's an episode where he comes across a prison camp where Romulan and Klingon
prisoners. Yes, yes, I know the episode.
Yeah.
They've trained their way out of it, and the kids are. I remember the Klingon kids want to go. They want to go fight with Worf. They want to be taught about their heritage.
Well, he has to wake that up in them. He's like, close your eyes, smell. No, really smell. And like, there's a huge world out there.
Yeah.
And you want to go explore it. And you want to go.
Yes. And the elders are like, well, crikey, we've been trying to breed this out. Like, we've tried not to expose them to this. So that, it's a Next Generation episode, if I'm not mistaken, where that happens.
Oh, you know what? Forget about Battlestar Galactica. Let's do a Star Trek podcast instead. We'll call it, I don't know.
Joy of Trek. That's a good name.
I wanted to do a cattle one. Stay with that theme. Fine.
Is it Joy of Cows? I don't know.
We come to the interior of the... wait, is the Rubicon?
Yes, it's the Rubicon.
Oh, Chief, we haven't needed you a lot. Hey, Chief, how are you doing? I just noticed, like... You just called for him, and then I sort of blasted over that, and then he had an opportunity to talk. And hey, Chief, how's it going? How's your week been?
Maybe there's been a communication problem because he's small and he is in the console, and like we can't like communicate on radio frequencies.
Oh, what was in the script? Where is he? Where is he currently? And oh yeah, he's inside the circuitry compartment. Oh, Chief, well. I hope you have enough like air in there and like a little mini Twinkie, little mini.
Or maybe just a regular size one and then the molecules are too big. Again, we get into that.
Don't you worry about me, boys. I'm doing just fine in here.
So that's like something that I would like to. I mean, I'm not gonna. I will get to there.
Do you want us?
We eject the warp.
No.
It's just a technical thing. And like, you know, we said that doesn't count as a warp core breach.
So the shutters on the Rubicon open, and they look at, whoa, there's a big fuck off wall there.
And it's
in the middle of nowhere.
And what's this? It looks like an O, and you can kind of see Bashir kind of turning around and like twisting himself so he can look up through the window.
Guys, you want to sign up to our Patreon and get this sheaf if you don't already have it. It's great.
And then you get this great shot which starts with the Rubicon, and then it pans out and
it zooms out.
Yeah,
and it's gorgeous shot and becomes tinier and tinier, and then this massive macro shot of the nose of the Defiant, and as a photographer I got really excited, like they've just done some really fantastic work here.
And they realize like, oh oops, we're still small
on the NX-74205 Defiant.
Chief, you're not gonna like this.
There's a little bit of techno bubble about how this has happened.
We didn't leave the anomaly by the same path which we entered it,
so the process failed to reverse itself.
The only way to reverse that is by going back in and then coming back out through the correct path. But they're going to need help from the Defiant to do that.
Yes, with the tractor beam and probably also the telemetry.
Yes.
Of the correct path. But first they have to get the Defiant's attention because their comms are down.
That's what I'm going to say. I was going to say, like, okay, the one thing that jumped out for me at this point was, like, they never mention the Dominion ship.
I mean, they haven't seen it.
It's right there.
Well, yeah, but... It might be on the other side of the giant fucking Defiant, but they just can't see it, right?
Okay, so originally I didn't realize during the episode that they don't have comms with the Defiant.
And they also don't have like external sensors, because you know that was the question that Zia had. Sensors or windows, give me one of them first, which is a really good way to like, you know, they're both very important, but I want one of them before the other.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Sisko gets dragged off to the bridge and he immediately starts his psychological nitpicking. Scap picking is the word I was looking for. By like trying to get his fingers behind the Jem'Hadar. Yeah.
And he's had some experience. Like, we recently watched Invasive Procedures, where DS9 is taken over. And there he also just watches his captors and goes, oh, yeah, where's this conflict? And I can just wiggle my little fingernails under the wallpaper.
See where it starts to itch and see where I can get...
Give a little tug
and
there.
He's a master of that. Like, he does that many, many times. Like, Kirk only wishes he was that good at talking.
He'd have to make up something like Fizbin to get this kind of reaction. And Sisko managed to keep us cool. Oh, Ronald D. Moore talked about there was an original bit in the script by David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, where this was taking place in actually the cargo bay where the rest of the crew were being held. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the Jem'Hadar much more directly like grabbed one of the ensigns and like held the disruptor to his head.
Right.
And like, okay, you're going to help me now. And Sisko refused and told the ensign, it's going to be all right. And then the first says, no, it isn't, and blows his head off.
Yeah. Ooh.
And they just loved like the audacity of that scene.
Right.
But it didn't fit the comedic tone. It had to go.
Right.
Because otherwise the episode wouldn't hold together.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I could have seen that. That would have made the Jem'Hadar a more credible threat, I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, this concept has been like René Echevarria. He wrote this shortly after he joined The Next Generation as a freelancer. He wrote a spec script.
Yeah.
And it got like, he pitched it to eventually like Jeri Taylor on The Next Generation. She rejected it. Michael Piller, when he became the showrunner of DS9, he rejected it. And Ira Stephen Baer then took over as showrunner and he rejected it. And eventually in season six, he finally
got it
finally published. Relented.
I mean, on one hand, I can see that it would have been treated by the viewing community as like, oh, just a red shirt getting killed in order to establish the fact that there's danger here. But I can see how it could have been made to work as well. So I can go both ways on that one. Second, immediately sees what Sisko is doing, because like,
giving him access to the engine room will only give him an opportunity to retake the ship. In fact, he's working on a plan at this very moment.
Now he wants him dead immediately.
And the first is like, oh, come on. Like, what do you want?
I was not aware that telepathy was a gamma characteristic.
Like, he's being very dismissive. And this is where I'm really starting to feel that, like, he's really insecure about his position. He's, like, very eager to prove himself and even more eager to do it without listening to what the second has to say.
Yes. Yes, it's a particular kind of personality trait that I've witnessed in others. He's predisposed to decisions where he's overruling others.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's a very good way to put it, yeah.
It's a flaw among quite a few leaders. It's a tough one to weed out.
And basically they said, like, okay, you're going to fix the warp core. And he throws them some bullshit about...
If you want me to teach your men how to repair a warp drive, that's fine with me. We'll begin with primary command and control systems. That should take about 6 hours. Then we will move up to basic engineering theory for Class 7 warp drive. Then enough!
And he goes like, oh, yeah, well, you can have your bridge crew because they're absolutely the most suitable for repairing the warp drive. The bridge crew is...
Why the bridge crew?
Yeah.
Because they were there at the time of photography, I'm aware.
Then we get the people on the Rubicon starting to play a game of Descent. And if I hadn't dated myself with any previous comments, like...
Oh, that's a good pull. Oh, now I'm also thinking, oh, wow. Yes, Descent, a famous early 3D shooter that featured like real 3D up and down environments.
Yeah,
and
basically mine tunnels with little ships flying through them trying to kill each other.
Incredible. Wow, it was a 3D Realms one, wasn't it?
I think so, yes. I'm not sure about the producer, but it was definitely one of the first full 3D environment.
Those were the days of like...
That came out, yes.
Video game companies building excessive, lavish offices and not really producing.
Yeah, it was a good game.
Daikatana wasn't.
Oh, sorry, what wasn't?
Daikatana. He was a very famous.
Doesn't ring a bell. Okay.
So we'll do another podcast.
They're basically flying through the plasma vent. I'm just going to like skip this because there's a little bit back and forth while what's happening here.
All right, I'll follow
but
you.
But they are flowing through the plasma vent, and of course, then the impulse drives are being activated. The plasma vents are being pre-charged, heated. Miles O'Brien says, like, oh, well, we only have a few seconds to get out of here. Fortunately, he is very familiar with the layout of these things, so he's like, down this corridor, take a left and an immediate right, and then...
It's like rally driving.
This conduit's filthy, Chief. Don't you ever clean up in here?
Yes.
You know?
Very, very, very
turn
much
left,
so.
Turn left, sharp right. Okay, and
Jadzia follows his instructions.
600-year-old piloting experience.
You can see the plasma already rushing towards them when they come to
the superheated plasma.
Which is about like, okay, I'm going to describe this hatch as charitable as I can.
Know.
It has all the protection potential of a
VCR
saloon
flap.
Door that flaps both
saloon
ways.
Saloon door is exactly how I described it to Mahatma. It's a little, and it's just like at ankle height.
Yeah.
It's the side of a VHS tape would fit through it.
And they kind of like burst through it, and apparently that flappy door flaps shut again, and the supercharged plasma on the other side.
Only a little bit vents into
yeah,
here.
Yeah, nobody really notices that. It's like, okay.
Incredible.
I'm not going to call it a warp core breach, but this is one of the things that I have mentioned as like a little bit of the technology, which is like, okay.
Okay, I'm on your side, because yes, why do you have a system that there is a saloon door, essentially, between you and space,
and
also...
And superheated plasma.
Superheated plasma. But plasma doesn't have to be very dense, does it? In fact,
no. It
wants to be not dense at all.
Well, it wants to be not plasma.
Well, I mean, once it's plasma, it just wants to expand and expand and expand, and then...
I don't know. I mean, like, that's the whole trick in tokamak reactors is to try to keep it as a plasma and to try to keep it from touching the walls. You know, so generally magnetic containment is what's used for that kind
phases
of effect.
Phases of matter, as I was taught.
Yeah.
Solid, most stable,
crystalline.
A liquid, which is usually optimal, right?
Yeah.
Gaseous, least dense of those three.
Yeah.
And then plasma, which requires a lot of heat, which is where the actual components of the atoms let go of one another under
basically
immense heat
basically
and energy.
Free electrons. Basically, the electrons,
protons,
the electron
neutrons.
Cloud kind of breaks down and it becomes an amorphous... I'm pretty sure that the atomic core structure remains stable.
Oh, does it? Oh,
I
cool.
think so. I don't know for sure. I thought like plasma was just... Greg!
Yeah, we've got a job for the chief! Come on in!
Okay, this is the kind of science that I'm not the best at, so I'm going to explain this as best as I was able to understand it. When it comes to plasma, yes, heat is usually required for plasma, like neon signs and lightning are examples of heated plasma. However, when you're talking about the phase transition from plasma to a gas, because that's the only direction which that can go, you can't do plasma directly to a liquid. There is a lot of disagreement there, and that's when it becomes a lot more about context, and scientists are not in good agreement on when something becomes a plasma or a gas specifically. That becomes a lot more fuzzy. So as far as an answer to that, your guess is as good as mine. It really just depends on what exactly the specific context is where we have, okay, this is our agreed upon definition for this case. In other cases, maybe not.
Well, okay, that settles that. Thank you.
I think he explained that really well
yes,
and very thoroughly. I was really impressed, like, how he mimed a PowerPoint presentation.
Yes. I mean, that seems to be the thing for this particular episode, that, like, it's so bad that you can't see us what we're doing, because, like, all these gestures and, like... hand motions, which are really essential to the things that we are explaining, or just simply cannot be conveyed properly through audio. yes.
Well, I mean, that is essentially not true. I mean, I'm sitting here watching you, and I'm fine.
and I've kept my arms crossed the entire time.
I wasn't going to call you out on that. I mean. We're pretty expressive, but like there is a reason why we're podcasters and we don't do YouTube or anything. It's too much work, guys.
Anyway, this brings the Rubicon out into main engineering, and this is followed by a whole series of shots where for some reason the Jem'Hadar don't see this little shuttle flying around, flitting about. There's a few like almost getting grabbed as they're reaching for a tool scenes. They're just like flying about, hiding among the ductwork.
This episode was nominated for, let me see, an Emmy Award for Outstanding Visual Effects in a Series, because, yeah, it was a tour de force.
I will give it that. Like, absolutely, it looked amazing.
Never seen anything like it on Star Trek. It was like the first time they see the trouble with Tribbles. They say, holy shit, Star Trek's capable of this?
Yeah.
Just on telly? Absolutely amazing. But yeah, there's a bit of panto, like, oh, he's behind you. And then Gemma Connor goes, what? What?
Yeah. A scene that we've missed, by the way, is after the commander reports that...
We will have impulse power back online in 30 minutes, but it will take several hours to restore warp capability.
Ah, yes.
Which what's his name? We
don't know the name of this particular... I mean, he has a name. Chief, what's the name of this Vorta?
That'd be Gelnon, who appeared in both this episode as well as the following episode, Honor Among Thieves, and he is played by Leland Crook.
Anyway, right. We can call him the Vorta, because per ship there is one Vorta.
Right. Oh, so I thought Vorta was just like their name. Like, the boss is always Vorta, is what I kind of thought that it was. I didn't know they had individual names.
They do. Most famous being Weyoun, played by Jeffrey Coombs.
Yes, I thought they were all played by Jeffrey Coombs.
This one isn't. And there's a female one. And there's a few others we see, but they keep getting cloned. So.
Oh, that must be it.
You can kill him and bring the actor
and
back.
And there's this gorgeous shot of the Dominion ship flying off, and it kind of looks like what's it called, a shield crab or a trilobite, like, you know, with the
a horseshoe crab.
Horseshoe crab, that's the one.
Right from the underside.
Yeah, that's the one that kind of looks.
Imagine like a synthwave horseshoe crab
with the glowing purple abdomen, which are covered by the shell of its upper shield.
Starship Troopers, scarab.
Yes, it's an amazing shot. Love that visual. Yeah.
Hey, check out the Patreon. I think we're talking ourselves into putting these sheafs up on the Patreon. So that'll be a reason. $5 a month would really, really help us out. Our hardworking chief, got to keep him supplied with synthahol and pump his little circuitry compartment full of workahol to keep him interested.
Yeah.
There's a weird insinuation that I'm being like drugged here or being put against my will to doing this. If you're just pumping workahol into my circuitry. Am I being kidnapped? Is that what's happening here? Is the workahol my Ketra cell white and you're just... Help! Send help!
The workahol. I love that, yes.
Well, yeah, but... it's 20% of the atmosphere on Voyager. It's the only explanation.
I mean, by my theory of Starfleet being filled with overachievers, I believe that that's just standard in any atmosphere ship.
Uh-huh.
Although some people apparently have a antidote against it, like what's her name from Lower Decks?
Oh, Mariner, Beckett Mariner.
Yes.
Yeah, she has an odd relationship. I mean, we find out stuff about her. Like, it's she's not just an interesting archetype. Mm. Besides, the whole series about is the other guys. Like, yeah, you've got the super performers. In a way, Jake Sisko was designed to fill that sort of role on Deep Space Nine
but he's not part of Starfleet.
No, exactly. But on The Next Generation, like, you had Wesley Crusher, who wanted to be in Starfleet, and he was brilliant. He was like the next generation of the next generation.
That's kind of like what Nog does here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And here, like, Jake is just a regular guy.
Yeah, he wants to be a writer.
Yeah, good at other things, just not interested in this.
And a dom jot hustler.
Got to get that table rejotted.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Rubicon has now seen the Jem'Hadar, and they quickly sort of fly up some pipes and hide behind some, a little bit of oversight. And the chief engineer, O'Brieno is as good as our chief engineer.
Oh.
Manages to get some visuals, and they quickly suss out what's happening.
Yes, because they can actually see what the crew is doing.
The captain's trying to take control of the ship from engineering. Kira is the only one actually working on the warp drive. It doesn't look like she's in any hurry to get it done.
I think Worf's trying to cover their tracks. It looks like he's sending false signals to the computer system.
Because that's what number two is pushing for. It's like, yeah, you teach him how to do this job,
yes,
and then he'll do it rather than you do it. She's like, well, it'll be faster if I do it myself. But no, he doesn't fall for that one.
Yeah, the second is trying to prevent, like, mutiny or sabotage. Sabotage, yeah.
Which is actually what Sisko tells Worf to do.
Plant a computer virus in the warp plasma subprocessor. Set it to cause a core breach once the ship reaches warp one.
Basically, the plot of Speed with Keanu Reeves.
The other one. It's like once they go over warp one and they drop below it, then they explode. Which would have been a better plan, to be honest. Because odds are that when they drop out of warp, it'll be next to a Dominion ship. And they'll stand a chance of doing some damage to that. So that would have actually been a better plan, I think.
Let's look at this division of labor, because I think this is a really interesting one. Nog has been tasked with decryption.
Yes, he's trying to get the command codes transferred from the bridge to engineering.
And Nog's a clever kid, but that's going to take him weeks. Yes. It's not going to work.
He's tried multiple algorithms and encryption codes, and it's not working because the secondary system is always kicking him back after he breaks the primary.
Yeah, he even confides in Sisko when they have a moment to talk, like, this isn't going to work. I hope you have a backup plan.
Yeah.
And he says,
yes, I'll destroy the ship.
There are still a few algorithms I haven't tried yet.
So he's been set to that. Worf is running interference.
Yes.
And Kira is the one who's actually working on slowing things down. And I think this is really brilliant because Kira, like, she's been in La Résistance before. Mm-hmm. She's the best liar.
Yeah.
She's a better liar than Worf is.
Yeah.
Right? Because she's done it for survival.
Yeah.
She's done infiltration missions. She can do this much better. And so when she says at some point, hey, I can't fool this guy for much longer, you don't argue.
No, you know, because, that's true. Yes.
Yeah. You don't lean on her and say that she has to try a little bit harder. Like, Sisko leans on Nog, you know, as the green ensign.
Yeah.
Like, I do need you to try a little harder. Okay.
At the same time, First comes in and, like, complaining about why the warp drive isn't ready yet. Second immediately blames it on Sisko, who does a brilliant fake outrage.
Stalling! Your second is the one who's slowing down the work. He countermands my orders, arbitrarily reassigns my crew. I can't get any work done in here.
First falls for it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
But he does the classic, like, you have 30 minutes to restore power, and then I start killing people. Because that's really going to make it go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
But he also tells Second, get off their case.
Yes.
Get out of their way. You're also being held responsible.
Yeah.
Now, we have skipped over a really interesting scene, which is when Sisko was being brought down to engineering. He was alone in the elevator, the strangely bright and stroboscopic elevator, turbo lift, where he asked the Second about this situation, who was remarkably open.
Yeah.
Where he mentioned, you know, I used to be first, and let me tell you, if I was still first when we
captured
the ship...
Yeah. Which he actually throws back to him later. Like, you should have gone with your instincts.
Yeah. But it's a cool bit of respect between two experienced leaders.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Both of whom who've experienced situations where they're having to take commands from less excellent leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they can sort of relate to that. But it doesn't stop Sisko from throwing the Second under the bus.
Of course not. I mean, that's his job at this point. So I've got a question. How is the Rubicon maneuvering? What is it using?
Jadzia is maneuvering the Rubicon.
I'm not asking who's piloting it.
Like, oh, okay.
What kind of propulsions? Are they using thrusters? We know that, like, Star Trek ships have thrusters, impulse, and warp drive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So which one are they using to maneuver around when they're flying?
I know. And, like, do they have intake vents, right? Do you want to push the button for the warp core?
Okay, I will push the button.
Yeah, okay.
There we go. Oh, that's the wrong one again.
Nope.
Damn it.
Sorry, you just negated it. You've got -1 warp drive, and now we've actually spoken over shacks. That's how bad it is. No, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the judges now. They're shaking their heads. I'm sorry, Kay. You missed this opportunity.
Okay. Actually, allow me to say this myself, because I know what they're doing. They're maneuvering on their anti-grav system, because we've seen this before. Like, whenever a ship moves out of the hangar deck, it kind of, like, floats up and then it zooms out. Of course, that only works in a gravity field. So it only works for a shuttle when it's inside a ship. Once they're outside the ship, they have to go to thrusters and later on to impulse and warp. They now have the gravity nets of the... Defiant, they can just use their own anti-gravity drive to...
Hey, they're using whatever propulsion they usually use when they land on a planet and don't want to incinerate the atmosphere.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I suppose, yeah.
Except on a much smaller scale, so it's even safer to be close.
The anti-grav system, let's call it that.
I don't know, maybe even the impulse. Who knows how any of this works? But it's expertly piloted. Now their big challenge is, okay...
Nog's a smart kid, but it's going to take him weeks to release the codes from here.
Can we do anything to help him?
Not from engineering. If we could get to the bridge, we could release the codes from there.
Jadzia hangs out near, like, a toolbox where she's got line of sight with the door, just waiting for somebody to walk through.
More very inobservant Jem'Hadar.
Dun, 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 dun!
But they manage to slip into the elevator, ride over to the bridge, where they miss their opportunity to slip out, and they have to do the most adorable little nose boop of the Rubicon against the control panel.
Oh, that's when they have to leave again. Yeah, it's really, really cute. Oh, let's definitely take the time to sort of explore it. Oh, I hope that Gif worked. Like, well, I wrote a script to take Gifs of every moment in the episode where a subtitle is in view and some moments in between, and then some of them didn't work, like 0.2% just got borked and just didn't work.
So we get a shot of every subtitle, and then every few seconds if there isn't any subtitles on ships.
I believe
that's what it amounts to.
So we've got about 1,000 Gifs here.
So they decide that they're going to help them out by rerouting the security system at the command council technobabble thing.
It's basically to help Nog achieve his goal.
Which requires them to beam into the security console and do some manual readjustment.
Yep, because the Rubicon's hiding underneath a console. And, okay, how are we going to do that? Well,
you wouldn't be able to go out there even if you wanted to. You wouldn't be able to breathe. The oxygen molecules outside are almost 2,000 times larger than anything your hemoglobin could assimilate. You'd suffocate.
Well, we'll just like beam some oxygen in there, and you've got like some time to breathe.
You've got about 20 minutes.
And I'm just like, again, like,
why not do it twice?
What? Yeah, that's the other one. Like, yeah,
because I have that written down in my notes.
And also, like, don't they have breathing apparatus? They must have like a smoke.
I know.
Like, don't they have like all you need is just like a little oxygen generator,
exactly,
which you can just put over your face and it generates chemical.
Just a little bottle.
Yeah.
You can just bring a little scuba.
No problem. Yeah. Just like one of those things that fall out of the ceilings in planes, you know?
A little scubette is all you need.
All right. If we beamed into the primary safeties junction, we should see a cluster of heuristic subprocessors next to a rectilinear expansion module.
So we get a lovely scene of Brian O and, what's his name? Bashir. Walking through these isolinear chips, which are plugged in. It's hilarious. They got like these big cables, which look like they're
enormous.
Yeah, they do remind me of those like tubes that you occasionally see hooked up to planes when they're still standing on the apron for providing extra ventilation to the engines or cooling powder.
Right.
That's what. Except those are yellow usually because they have to stand out on the apron. These are all white and they kind of look like huge tubes. Like
It looks like a kid's game show.
Yes. Very good.
The set of a Nickelodeon like game show, and you've got to clamber over them.
American Gladiator.
Gladiator. Japanese spectacular game show. All these glowing things. Even reminded me of like how the interior of a computer was represented in the 1990s film Hackers. With Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie, and both of them wear a hot red Lycra dress. Definitely go watch that movie. Woke a lot of things up for a lot of people in the 90s.
Yes. So O'Brien tells...
Oh, we did miss the booping thing. You're completely right. That's how they opened the
Door to get back onto the ship. So Bashir and O'Brien are walking around, and it's basically Bashir's just there for moral support.
That chip behind you is carrying 20 microamps of electric current. Now, it's not very much, but it's enough to fry every synapse in my tiny body. Thanks for the tip.
20 microamps, which could fire every synapse in my body.
Yes.
Oh, And you passed medical school, did you? You only mistook a pre-ganglionic fiber for a post-ganglionic nerve.
Yes.
And nobody bothered to correct you on the word synapse.
So there's like a bit of fussing around. Like O'Brien has to be helped by Bashir to remember where he is and where he at. It's like he's starting
really well.
Yes, he does that very good. Yes, he talks him through. He's like, okay, so we have this chip. Oh, there's at least 2 dozen of those things in here.
Okay, and what's this one over here? No, still nothing?
So anywhere those two come together? And that's when he goes like, oh, yeah, there's only one place where there's one of those at the base of one of the other ones. And that's like over
and
there.
And very specifically does it. Yeah. Like they all look the same. Yeah, don't look. Yeah. Close your eyes. Picture it.
Because he literally says, I can draw this thing from memory. And it's like, yeah, so like use that then.
Yeah.
Which leads to a scene where they are like juggling these big pipes. With a great effort, Bashir finally plugs it into the right port, for it to immediately fall out again.
So we've got to try again.
There's a bloody bayonet closing on that. Just give a twist at a quarter turn and it should stick in there.
Time for round 3 of Takeshi's Castle or whatever the we're doing. Yes. How much fun must it have been to build this set?
Yes.
Right, and to play around in it.
O'Brien does a bit of spot welding with his phaser by like getting Julian to like plug the thing back in, like, now turn your head away, yeah, don't look at this, and he just like
just lean back a bit phasers. And then from the hip
phasers it. Yes,
unbelievable, dude. And they're both like high on anoxia.
Okay, so it's not on, no, it's not from, you can see him with his stretch, his arms or actually,
yeah, that's good form, unsupported, just loosely sort of point and click.
Yes.
And both of them are like soups woozy because Jadzia just refuses to beam any more air
oxygen. No, yeah.
And they don't have their little scubette that they ought to have.
Captain, I did it. I don't know how, but I released the command codes.
Well done.
Doesn't realize he was helped, but it suddenly worked.
Hey, take the credit.
Oh, no, absolutely.
You succeeded. Because this is how people in Starfleet succeed. You've got friends, people on your crew, and you work together, even if you don't know it. Ooh, but just as success is within their reach, suddenly they're all summoned to stand on one side again.
How long has the warp drive been repaired?
At least 1 hour. Maybe longer.
And they managed to conceal it from you?
Number two is definitely losing some credits here.
Yeah, there's blame going back and forth. Hey, if you told me not to interfere. Yeah, I did tell you to watch them.
Yeah.
I'm actually on the side of the first here a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I know he's made it difficult for the second and they're just different command styles. I don't think he was necessarily wrong.
Well, they have a little argument about which is true. Two says, like, we need to check everything for sabotage, which he is absolutely correct in.
Yes.
And again, one goes like, well, no, spending time, more time in Federation space exposes us to detection. And you wouldn't want your last mission to end in failure now, would you?
Hey, but I think that's a valid command decision as well. Like, yes, yeah, there's a risk of sabotage, but there's also a risk of discovery and destruction. Like, which problem do you want to have?
Oh, true.
Right? And that's something that a leader has to do, and very quickly.
Number one orders us to bring us to Warp 4, and
at least we're going to take them with us.
I and love her attitude.
Everybody is very calm, especially Nog is very calm among that. Like, you know, from the others I kind of expected, but Nog is very, like, you can see him looking a little bit apprehensive, but he doesn't.
I bet Worf is just rock hard. Oh, like, double boners. Like, yeah, today is a good day to die. Finally! Dear diary, it finally happened.
Today was a good day to die, yes. But fortunately, the Rubicon goes on a little killing spree with its phasers and its photon torpedoes.
Yeah! The Jem'Hadar tried to shoot it. Terrible. Firing really close to the warp drive.
Yeah, I noticed that, yes. Like, okay.
Any one of those stray shots would have done it.
Yeah.
We've all seen First Contact. We know how fragile that system is. But yeah, Jadzia gets some straight to the heart.
Torpedo
and you're
warp.
Now dead.
Yes, we're too close for missiles. Go to phasers. Nock gets knocked about a bit. Jadzia.
Everybody gets in on the action.
Worf does a little classic neck snap.
Such a gruesome move. Also, very impressive because Jem'Hadar are famously hardy.
Yes.
But he's had some one-on-one combat training, so he's probably snapped a few Jem'Hadar necks before.
He probably has a specific holodeck program for Jem'Hadar.
For neck snapping?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen his calisthenics program, so...
They're very colorful. Kira grabs a weapon. Cool move that she does. She does a little somersault over a spare dead Jem'Hadar's weapon and takes cover and blam, blam, blam. Everybody's... Oh, the whole crew's working together.
I'm flooding all the compartments except the engine room with anesthazine gas. Major, get that virus out of the computer before someone on the bridge engages the warp drive.
Aye, sir.
The day is saved, and Sisko... I mean, it's a bit gloaty, him standing over the dying second.
Oh, yes.
He should have listened to you and killed me when he had the chance.
It's also a bit of, like, respect and acknowledgement, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because that's how the second responds. Yeah.
He was a first. They don't need... Listen.
As he says, obedience brings victory.
Yes.
And victory brings... I'm reminded of an episode of Babylon 5.
Yeah.
Where the alien Centauri character, Londo Malari, tells the story of, do you know, on my planet, there used to be a second sentient species called the Zon, and we fought many terrible wars together, which led to all of these traditions. And do you know what it was that the last Zon said at the moment of his death? Do you know the words that he said?
Mm-hmm.
A very popular and pretty dark Centauri joke.
Yes. After the commercial break, everything has been restored as it should be.
Yeah, because Sisko goes to Worf, hey, your wife's here. Yeah. And she flies the Rubicon up to his nose.
And she sort of kisses him through the window, yes.
And you've got this huge close-up on his double nostril face. Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
And yes, we were in Worf's bar. We're in Quark's bar. Wow, Worf's bar would have been a different thing.
Yeah. Where Odo comes in. Oh, yeah. No, first there's the poem.
Ah, yes.
Blood wine. And yes, can I finish here the poem? And
Jadzia really wants it. And he says, it's not finished.
Yes.
Well, can I have the first line? Well, all right, then. But it is my first poem.
Yes.
And I've worked long and hard on it. And I do not wish to be ridiculed.
Yes. And then he's like,
this is the story of a little ship that took a little trip. What do you think?
And like, she cottons on very quickly.
Oh, it takes her so long. Well, like, rhymes. First she goes, yeah. Well, it definitely does rhyme.
Yes.
And he's got this poker face.
Yeah.
And it's I think this is canonically his first real joke.
Okay.
Because I think he spent all this time working on this joke.
Ah, very
right,
good.
Right, more
yes.
So than the poem. Oh, I'm gonna do a joke, and it's such a good one. He's so proud of himself.
But no, there's nothing on the pad, and.
And they're so fun together.
They are. They're a lovely couple.
And Odo, who has not had much to do, sort of walks in past where.
It's the first time we see him this episode, yeah.
Bashir and O'Brien are telling tall tales to Morn and
how they were a young woman. How they did this amazing deed, and they were flying around and they were shooting things and they rescued this day. And
so close to the Jem'Hadar, we see the veins in his eyes. Like they're doing a really good job telling this story.
And Odo is just goes like,
are you sure you've returned to your normal size? Of course.
Why?
Well, you both appear to be a couple of centimeters shorter than you were the last time I saw you. A changeling notices that sort of thing.
And they both sort of blanch, especially when Quark comes up.
I didn't want to say anything, but you do look a little on the petite side.
Yes. I'm sure it's like, quick, to sick bay.
Yeah.
And we have this lovely moment between Quark and Odo.
Where they essentially high-five each other. Yes. This was just a casual, like, oh.
They raise eyebrows at each other, yeah. And they say you don't have a sense of humor.
Such a good episode.
Yes.
I was looking at my little soundboard.
So I think
here
we need.
Well.
Oh, no, that's the last one is the exit thing. So, okay.
Oh, wait. I've got one for this.
All right.
Here, look. Sound can't be played, file not found. Oh, what happened to my soundboard? Okay, well, I'll figure this out. It was going to be a little flourish of the music,
okay.
But
so let's see. Warp core breach, but at one point, one of the Jem'Hadar accuses Sisko of treachery.
Stop when he's picking your nits, you'll go blind.
When he's not complying, and it's like, it's not treachery. It's like, he didn't promise nothing. It's like, he's a prisoner. He's like being put to work. It's like, he cannot commit treachery. It's like, you can't.
Yes, in fact, well, at least on Earth, we have codes of war, which includes, like, yeah. It's a prisoner's duty to survive, evade, resist, and escape. I think that's the doctrine in the,
something
in,
like that,
in the States. But there's also, like, all sorts of things where, if you do, actually, no, this is valid. You give up your prisoner status, and then your life no longer has to be protected.
Right. Okay, so, deleted scenes. You said you had a good one?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, this is a little bit grim. The cargo bay.
Yeah.
Right, where all the rest of the crew
yes.
have not been involved in any of this. Suddenly getting gassed.
Yeah.
And they're all huddling together and like, what are they doing? And then, like, there's one particular, like, a display console where they can see that it's Sisko's command codes. And they're all just, the captain is gassing us?
Yes.
What did we do, Daddy? No!
Okay, yes, that's a good one.
Too dark?
No, I can get there. I can get in with that, yes. At first I thought I wanted to see a scene where Bashir is doing a guided meditation of O'Brien to get him to remember how to get to the right place in the Isolinear ships. But the second one is, no, what I really wanted is Galaxy Quest-esque scenes where they have like a chomper scene when they're jumping through the Isolinear ships, which are moving around, which they need in order to get to the correct place to...
Oh, that would be amazing.
Rather than them tugging hoses around, I wanted to see something where they had to like move their way around the console and,
yes.
and jump the big gap over the electron flow or something like that.
Yeah, and then just go through the chompers and then you have the Sigourney Weaver very clearly mouthing, what the f*** is this?
Yeah.
Why is it here? It makes no logical sense.
It's here because it was in the show. So, what do we have for next week?
Let's find out, because we've sort of settled into this pattern that our chief engineer, Greg, picks out the next episode for us, looking at all the recommendations we've been given and also trying to give us a nice little like blend of all the various Star Treks that there are. And so he's recorded a few lines so that we can try and guess what it's going to be.
Bring it on.
Okay, here comes number one.
Mr. Chekhov, the floor is no place for an officer.
Okay.
So original series or one of the movies?
Gotta be, right?
Well, Mr. Chekhov, the floor is no place for an officer. Ooh.
He's not going to make us do a movie. I mean, I love the movies and everything, but it's an awful long. It would be awful long recording. Let's say that for a special occasion.
So let's say, yeah, probably original series, which makes the odds of us guessing which episode it is very small.
Yes, because neither of us are very familiar. Oh, it could be. I was going to say it could be animated series, but it couldn't because Walter Koenig wasn't invited back.
No.
Okay, number two.
He's probably terrified of your beads and rattles.
Ooh.
Probably terrified of beads and rattles. I wonder if it's the one with the hippies.
Oh, again, I'm already out of my depth here. All right, next
Herbert,
one.
You are Herbert. Someday I'll show it to you. I haven't even seen it myself, but there's one about space hippies, and like they're like And if you're if you're not cool, then you're Herbert. That's all I know.
Oh, right. That sounds vaguely familiar, but yeah.
Strange how it seeps into culture, isn't it? Okay, number three.
Yes, of course. That is exactly why I hate you. Because you are identical.
Oh.
Okay.
Because you're identical. So maybe a clone episode?
Clones?
Spock getting cloned again. How many times did Spock get cloned in the original series? Ooh. Or in total?
I kind of want to ask Chief, but I'm worried that we maybe get a spoiler for next time. So let's not worry about that one. Okay, number four, our last one, I think.
Yeah?
I'm not programmed to respond in that area.
Oh, that sounds like a Data thing.
Yeah, but it's the original series.
Yeah.
They didn't have, like...
They weren't talking to the computer then, were they? No, they weren't.
Noonien Sung in the... Let's hear it again.
I am not programmed to respond in that area.
Maybe it is the computer. Maybe it's Majel Barrett's. Yeah. So something about beads. Chekhov's on the floor. They're all identical. And we have really not seen much of the original series.
I'm afraid that I am out of my depth here. So unfortunately, our guess is random, right? Chief, let's hear it. What is it going to be?
The original series, season 2, episode 12, Mud.
Ooh,
It's Mud.
Yeah, he's back again. Or you know, this is the original encounter with Mud. Probably.
I was literally just listening to our episode from Discovery where the time
magic
the time
to make the sanest man go mad, featuring yes. Oh, this is going to be so exciting! What an amazing recommendation. Okay.
Fantastic.
Really, really excited about that.
Okay, so I want to have a little commemorative poem of my own. It's not entirely appropriate, but it was what sprung to my mind at the end of the episode. There once was a Klingon on Bajor, whose skills with the Batleth were major. He started to fight with all of his might and did his commander a favor.
Whoa! With that, what the hell was that? It was a fantastic fucking poem, and we're leaving Starfleet. Energize!
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode with your friends Kay and Cocky. Production and editing by your chief engineer Greg, and music by Fox Amore. Join us next time for iMud, the original series, season 2, episode 12. Visit joyoftrek.com/links to send us your recommendations, support us on Patreon, or to find us on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to The Joy of Trek, and we'll see you out there.